Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery.
In this episode, we'll talk a little about magic in the mountains.
We'll also have a selection of music and stories from the mountains as well. Stick around.
Hi. Welcome to New World Witchery. Apologies for the long delay. This probably has been a episode a week or two later than we normally would do another episode.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a lot of things sort of up in the air trying to juggle time-wise. And we thought it might be kind of fun tonight to sort of do a really, really, really superficial skimming.
I like the word informal.
An informal examination of mountain magic. And what that means is I'm not pulling out my folklore books. I don't have all of my research notes in front of me. So essentially what you're listening to is me naked, and I'm really terrified. But I'm going to try and hide it.
He's not naked, people.
I just am feeding the rumor mill.
He is fully
lately.
Clothed.
I apologize. Yes, I'm not literally naked, just emotionally bare to you all. So I don't have any research notes to hide behind or anything like that tonight. And I thought it would be kind of fun just to kind of tease out some ideas about mountain magic that mm-hmm. people might have. We may come back to this at a later date and really do a more in-depth episode. I just thought it'd be kind of fun for us to talk a little bit about our perceptions of mountain magic, what we know about mountain magic. You know, where do you find it? What is it made up of? All of those things. So, go.
Okay, well, for me, it's not like, I think I've said this before, it's not a set tradition of magic. It's more like the compilation of old wives' tales and
like home remedies.
Yeah, and just untraditional things that people do that like kind of make you go, I wonder where that came from.
Mm-hmm. Can you give some examples of that?
Well, different little home remedies or different things, which we never really had. So I don't have any personal examples.
You say you didn't have any of these little home, maybe not home remedies, but like I remember you talking about like putting blue bottles in the window. Like, didn't you say you grew up, like, putting blue bottles, like, cobalt blue bottles in the window?
My grandmother did, but it wasn't for anything in particular. I mean...
But it came from somewhere.
Yeah, that's true.
So...
Which we've talked about in our witch bottle special episode.
Or sweeping under your feet. Vacuuming under your feet.
Yeah, that... You don't do. Like, when I was at work, because you'll either never get married or you'll be barren. You hear different things.
Mm-hmm.
Or my mom, like, wouldn't vacuum under her feet. So, yeah, just little random things like that, to me, is what mountain magic is about.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we're necessarily mountain people, but, you know.
Lane come from hill folk. It's the hill witch. She's come to eat her children.
Anyway. But one I thought was really interesting that I wanted to bring up. This just came up recently at the place I work. One of the women was having some problems, or her husband was having some problems at his work, and someone suggested to her that she put this other woman's name in the freezer, and that would help her to leave this woman's husband alone. Sorry, there's a lot of pronouns in this. It's making it complicated. But I just don't want to use names, you know.
Person A said to person
exactly.
B.
Put her name in the freezer. And So she does that now. And, like, you know, she is a good Christian woman and would never think to do any magic or hoodoo or anything like she doesn't think about any of that being magical. While on the other hand, when I hear it, I'm like, oh, that's totally witchy. That's a witchy thing to do.
Right. It gets your witchy whiskers twitching. You know, you're aware that there's something about that.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, I found that really, really funny. And she does it too. I mean, and she said it worked.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, I would say that seems like the kind of spell that would be derived from, like, hoodoo practices, specifically, which may not jive with some people's conceptions of what goes on in mountain magic, more specifically. But I think that it kind of gets to your point that you're making about it's the little bitty teeny things that are sort of scattered throughout the practices of this area.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's, Christianity has taken over so much here, you know, from basically the very beginning, that it's magic has survived, but in interesting little ways, not as a full out, you know, tradition.
Yeah. And a lot of these sorts of mountain magic practices, would have been done by people who, if you had called it mountain magic, would have been offended and had very, very little tolerance for that sort of damnable talk and chatter. You know, they would have felt very, very defensive of their home remedies as something God-given and natural, and they would have assumed magic meant something supernatural and devilish.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us in our modern day and age, especially for us as people who view magic as a positive thing and who don't have the diabolical associations, may not be steeped in Christianity as our personal faith, we can approach it and say, oh, that's magic and that's really interesting. But we have to remember that from their context, it's we have to be respectful about what to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's I think Jack Montgomery, in an episode where we interviewed him, made a really good point of talking about, like, he recognized all of these magical practices when he showed up at I think it was a Baptist church. And one time he made the mistake of mentioning that he thought it looked like a magical practice. And he thought in the most positive way possible he was talking about it. And people just lost their cool about that.
Mm-hmm.
So he learned, you know what, I can point out a lot of things that are similar, but there are certain terms that I shouldn't use in discussing it. And so I think that's there's some relevance to that. When we look at mountain magic, you know, if you're talking about somebody who's practiced home remedies and maybe even mountain midwifery, they probably know some things that we would consider granny magic or mountain magic. But they wouldn't want to hear it called that necessarily.
Yeah. So what other things can you think of that would be?
Paint blue. Putting the paint blue on the porch. Where you paint your porch. It's a very specific, almost sky robin's egg blue.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to keep ghosts out.
Hmm. No one calls them haints.
Haints. There you go. Paint blue. That's why it's paint blue.
Interesting. Like if she, you know, just got out of bed and looks awful, or like, you know, like, just for example, we need to go to the grocery store, but she, you know, hasn't had a shower and she just looks awful. She'd be like, I can't go out like this. I look like a haint.
Oh, she's so country. I love it.
I know.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that's one that always pops to mind.
Mm-hmm. I've never heard of that practice, actually.
Of doing the blue in the porches?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, and the other upside to it is, if you do that on your porches, wasps won't build in those areas that are painted blue.
Why?
I have no idea, but they don't, for whatever reason.
That's really fascinating.
Again, I'm flying without notes, so there may be scientific evidence disputing this, but that's my understanding, is that wasps don't build where you have a blue painted porch. Other things. Putting iron or an axe or a knife under the bed during the labor and delivery process.
Mm-hmm.
Telling somebody to make sure that there's no knots tied during labor so that you don't have... you know, the baby bound up, the baby doesn't get strangled on its own cord or anything like that.
Well, it just makes labor easier,
mm-hmm.
supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
There
seems to be a fairly strong belief in people having, you know, quote unquote, the gift or the second sight, or you know, having the ability to have psychic visions.
The shine.
They've got a shin to them. Don't you mean a shine? Quiet, boy, you want to get sued. Anyway. Yeah, they've got a, like, they may have the ability to occasionally have prophetic visions, dreams, things like that. But they wouldn't necessarily read cards.
Right.
So, but they might. I mean, there are some, I mean, that's the other thing about this, is there's a lot of sort of flexibility depending on what part of the mountains you're in, depending on what the cultural context is. For example, if you have a fairly strong Irish community, there's this tradition of fairy doctoring that comes out of Ireland,
mm-hmm.
where the belief is when a child gets sickly and wan, they're losing their health because the fairies have done something to them.
Right.
Like a changeling is a good example. And so they would do something... the fairy doctor would come in and do something to remedy that situation by addressing the fairies. They would go in and get the child back from the fairies, so to speak.
So is that still done here? Because I mean, I'm not here.
Not here, but...
Like, in Appalachia? Because I know the Scots-Irish settled that area.
Well, the Scots-Irish are not necessarily the Irish. The Scots-Irish are displaced... I don't remember if they're British or what, but they were displaced, moved to basically Northern Ireland,
mm-hmm.
and then shipped off from there to America.
Okay.
So they're not straight up Irish. They may have some Irish mixing in there, but it's not as strong. But you do still have Irish immigrants that show up in Appalachia as well.
Mm-hmm.
Especially during and after the Civil War. And I know that that tradition existed at least until the early 1900s.
Hmm. That actually reminds me of another superstition, I guess,
mm-hmm.
that I've only heard of in the South. Maybe it's other places. I honestly don't know, so please mm-hmm. correct me if I'm wrong. But that you're not supposed to show a baby their reflection.
In a mirror.
For the first year.
Yeah.
Or else it can get trapped, or the fairies will steal it, or their soul, basically.
Yeah, I don't know for sure. Again, flying without notes. I don't know for sure that comes out of fairy doctoring, but that sounds like something that could very easily come out of fairy doctoring traditions.
Yeah.
I'm sure I had another one that was fairy doctoring.
Sorry.
Oh,
after your train of thought.
That's all right. Oh, covering the mirrors when somebody dies.
Yes, I was thinking of that one as well.
Yes, you cover the mirrors when somebody dies, and because you don't want their soul to get lost in your house and you don't want anything to be able to come in and take advantage of the situation.
Right.
I don't know actually that that's fairy doctoring now that I'm saying that out loud. That may just be some other branch of magic that's influenced it, but I do think it's very mountain.
Yeah. That actually reminds me of a Mexican tradition that someone told me that you would cover the mirrors during storms.
I'm
not quite sure why.
Yeah.
But like during bad thunder and lightning storms, you would cover mirrors.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that I've heard that, but that's could be interesting. I think we're supposed to get some storms tonight, so we can try that. and then, what are some others? There's a lot of things that have to do with love.
Yeah.
There are a lot of love charms that kind of come out of Appalachia. And some of them are fairly weird and gruesome. I know that there's something about, like, carrying a turkey foot around with you, in the Ozarks, at least. That has to do with gaining love.
Yeah, I feel like we should point out there's mainly two branches of mountain magic that you'll hear about, and that's Appalachian and Ozark.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to say the Rockies don't enter into it. Nothing. I haven't read anything that like places a branch of mountain magic specifically in the Rockies. That's not to say there isn't. There absolutely probably are branches of magic that have been built up around the Rocky Mountains, and you know, and by extension, going into New Mexico and all that. I think those probably are areas of magic that would have had influence in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe more of the Curanderismo, Brujeria style stuff would be working its way into the Rockies. But speculation, let's bring it back into the Ozarks and Appalachians. They're not the same. There do seem to be some differences. The Ozarks having more hoodoo type material in them, and the Appalachians having slightly more Germanic influence. But that being said, there are also a heck of a lot of similarities.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. Other things that kind of come out of it, out of the mountain lore, are things like planting by the signs.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very big. There's a lot of agricultural stuff, I think, that happens.
Yeah, which makes sense. I mean, it's an agricultural type of place.
Yeah. And, you also have to remember with, like, the Appalachians, especially... there were a lot of places that didn't. There are some places that still don't have electricity.
Mm-hmm. Or like running water.
Yeah, for a very long time, and like we're talking 1980s, 1990s, there would be whole communities that didn't have, indoor, personal electricity for every house.
Mm-hmm.
So these are places that have grown up fairly culturally isolated, because of that. They've been able to retain a lot of their traditions, but in some cases that those traditions have also been maintained without understanding where they came from, and so we've lost a lot of why they do what they do. And then you have the Melungeons. Do you know about the Melungeons?
Mm-mm.
It's weird, like, I want to call them like a race of people, but they're not really, it's not like a race of people, but it's hard to nail down what their ethnicity is,
uh-huh.
And they're, basically even the mountain folk kind of consider them backward, but they also, they have a very distinct community in the mountains. And I don't think that they're considered like necessarily backward anymore, but they're this very specific and they were a mixed race for sure. So there's speculation about like, did they intermarry with the Native Americans? Did they intermarry with African slaves who ran away into the mountains during slavery? Where did these communities form? But they're sort of like, I've heard from people who grew up near the mountains that occasionally the Melungeons would be used as sort of boogeymen to scare children. Yeah, like you might tell a kid, you need to go to bed or the Melungeons are going to come in your window and get you.
That's
or something.
Funny.
So yeah, so there's that too. I'm trying to think if there's other stuff that we can kind of throw out there. Not talking specifically about practices. I know one thing that you had pointed out when we kind of talked about this earlier was how everything is sort of little tiny pieces mm-hmm. spread amongst a larger group of people.
Yeah. So it's really hard to nail down like what it is, or it's honestly hard to talk about because it's like, you know, what is a granny magic magician, whatever you want to call her, a granny witch do?
Right, like is
like I picture mostly healing and stuff like that, and like a.
Like herbal remedies and midwifery.
Yeah, like a community service type of person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's a very common thing to sort of imagine that being the case. But I think there's always little other things that kind of work their way into that. You know, like you know, belief in fairies. Is that part of it? Well, for some people, probably. You know, would a granny also know, you know, the best way to remove a curse? Mm. Not necessarily that she would be able to curse, but as part of her healing component, would she know how to do that? So I think other things kind of work their way in.
That reminds me of some healing things I did when I was little, or they did for me, my grandparents. I don't know if I want to admit this, but I had warts on my hands when I was little. Like,
did he buy them off of you?
Like a lot. Kind of the thing that we did, he had a pocket full of pennies and he held them out to me and I was supposed to pick the shiniest one. And I remember specifically doing this. And so I picked the shiniest one and he said, just keep it with you. And, they went away. I didn't have them removed. I didn't have them. And like we moved then from one part of the state to another.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly think like it has a lot to do with the soil you hear sometimes, like for a scientific explanation and not a magical one.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm not saying that the painting did it necessarily, but I just think it's really interesting that we did that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like there, that's, you know, that's wart charming is a big part of what goes on in, you know, in powwow communities as well, but also in those mountain communities.
I also remember other remedies for it. Like if that didn't work, you know, you're supposed to let, or how you get them is if a frog pees on your hand, you get warts, which never happened to me. I was too girly. I would have never picked up a frog. But also you're supposed to like let a grasshopper chew
bite
them off.
They're supposed to bite the wart and draw blood from it.
Yeah, which is gross. Also wouldn't have let happen. But that was like another remedy if the penny didn't work. So
yeah, and I mean there were, I mean, there's all sorts of things. Like, you could rub a horseshoe with it and leave it in the road, and whoever picked up the horseshoe next would get your warts.
Huh.
I remember reading that, I think, in Vance Randolph. So, yeah, there's all sorts of, like, wart-charming remedies. So that's another component of it, and that's healing.
Yeah, that's what made me think of it.
But there seems to be specialization in that. Like, if you talk about you know, healers in those traditions, like blood stoppers. There are people who are good at, you know, blood stopping, or people that are good at taking the fire out of burns, people that are good at, you know, healing warts. And that seems to come from the same powwow traditions.
Mm-hmm.
So there must be some German influence there.
Yeah.
Really briefly, I think it would be worth also kind of talking about the word witch in the Appalachian context.
Hmm.
Because, you know, while we're talking about these sort of granny magic type people, there's also strong belief in witches in Appalachia, you know, and if somebody, you know, something goes wrong with your land or your cattle or your family, really easy to go ahead and say, oh, that's that witch down the street that did it.
Yep. That's what happened with the Bell Witch.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and the witches, they can throw their little wax witch balls at you and curse you and, you know, cause all sorts of calamity. But then the flip side of that is there's another use of the word witch in Appalachia, which is the water witch.
Mm.
There's dowsers.
Yes.
It's a big part of Appalachian culture.
But that's a positive thing.
Yeah. That's if you say somebody's a water witch. Nowadays, there might be a little bit of an eyebrow raise because there are alternative words for it. But you know, saying somebody was a dowser or a water witch carried about the same weight. For a good portion of the 19th century, at least, and early 20th century. So all that is to say, it's a very interesting topic. There's a lot to it. There's a lot of little pieces.
Mm-hmm. Which makes it in my opinion, harder to talk about.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of fun to kind of dig into and mm-hmm. like, and you know, and you used to complain a lot about like, oh, I don't have any family traditions, I don't have any family. And then like, we get you talking on here and it's like, you have so much stuff, but it's all kind of tucked in weird corners of your family history.
Like one little word will kind of like jog my memory and I'm like, oh yeah, we did that. That's really bizarre.
Yeah. You're like, oh, okay. And then we can look at it and go, oh, that's where that comes from. Mm-hmm. This is connected to this bigger thing. So anyway, we hope that that kind of gives a kickstart to the discussion. We're going to go ahead and cut to some promos and previews and whatnot. And then after that, we'll probably just sort of wrap up. And yeah, hope this episode is interesting to everyone listening.
My name is Scarlett. I'm an eclectic neo-pagan witch based in Wisconsin on the shores of Lake Michigan. On my podcast, Lakefront Pagan Voice, I share my perspective on pagan topics, life, local flavor, and a few of my favorite things. I'm always learning, and I hope you'll explore with me. You can find my show on iTunes and at Podbean. And here is a cow.
Irish drinking songs, Scottish bagpipes, totally trad jigs and reels, Celtic rock. If it's independent Celtic music, you can find it on Mark Gunn's Irish and Celtic Music Podcast at CelticMusicPodcast.com.
Thank you. feed Bunny Bo like a bird on the wing. Onward the sailors cry, carry the lad who's born to be king over the sea to sky. Speed Bunny Bo like a bird on the wing. Onward the sailors cry, carry
And now we'll have a pair of witch stories from the Mid-Atlantic and Appalachian area. First we'll hear How Witch Balls Are Made, from the folklore collection The Silver Bullet by Hubert J. Davis. Then we'll hear The Witch of Booger Hole, from Patrick W. Gaynor's collection Witches, Ghosts, and Signs.
How Witch Balls Are Made, collected by Gertrude Blair, Roanoke, Virginia, June 10, 1939. From the collection The Silver Bullet by Hubert J. Davis. Mize Eisen, a Melungeon, lived with his wife Kate and their 10 children near the head of Mud Creek up near Big Laurel Holler, not too far from Zolly and Izzy Snipe's cabin. Kate had a very fine flock of black leghorn chickens, of which she was very proud. Izzy Snipes took a fancy to one of Kate's big black roosters and wanted to buy it. But Kate thought Izzy was a witch, and she'd been told never to let a witch have anything, because they would be able to cast spells on their former owner. So Kate refused to sell Izzy the rooster. One day, Kate was out in the barnyard gathering eggs and feeding her chickens when she suddenly fell down as if she'd been shot. She was conscious, but unable to move or speak. Finally, one of the children came to look for her, and Mize moved her over into the cabin. When they dumped the broken eggs out of her apron, they found a round, hairy ball about the size of a chestnut burr, and it had a foul odor. Mize examined her and found a big blue spot on her left side just under her heart. Then they knew that Izzy had shot her with a witch ball, because she had refused to sell the rooster. Kate was all right the next day, but Mize was mad as a wounded bear. He took that witch ball and hot-footed it over to Zolly Snipe's place. He told Zolly what had happened and showed him the witch ball. He said that if Zolly didn't do something about Izzy's shenanigans, the Melungeons would handle it on their own. Zolly was afraid of the Melungeons, so he begged Mize to give him the witch ball and give him a chance to do something. Now, Zolly wasn't sure Izzy was a witch, so while she was out milking, he searched the cabin for some evidence. He found nothing. Then he sat down in front of the fire to think. After a while, he got up to throw the last log on the fire, and as he moved the log, he thought he saw one of the hearthstones move. He examined it and found it was loose, so he pulled it up and found a dirty rag under it. Under the rag was a small Bible. He took it out carefully, and under it he found 6 witch balls, just like the one Mize had given him. Zolly was afraid to touch the witch ball, so he replaced the rag and the stone, laid the witch ball Mize had given him on the hearth, and began to examine the Bible. In the back of the Book of Revelations, he found what he could barely read as the name Izzy Snipes X, which seemed to be written in blood. This was the oath of allegiance to the devil she had signed. This was all positive evidence that she was indeed a witch, and Zolly was boiling mad as he waited for Izzy's return. When she joined him in front of the fire, he told her of Mize's visit and of his discovery of the Bible and the witch balls under the hearthstone. He was mad as a wet hen and bellowed, "Izzy, if you don't tell me about this witching, I'll throw you out in the snow and let them Melungeons sick their dogs on you." Well, Izzy had to make a hangman's choice. If she blabbed about the witchcraft, the devil might beat her to death. On the other hand, she knew that Zolly meant what he said, and that it would be certain death if the Melungeons caught her, because Mize was the only one, wasn't the only one she'd given a hard time over the years. Then she thought that if she told Zolly everything, and they both tried to get right with the Lord, she might be able to get her bonded soul back from the devil. So she made up her mind to come clean with Zolly. "I know you recollect, Zolly, that when I was a young gal, no more than 16, I was awful purty, and just about as silly as any gal could be. I was a greedy gut, too. I wanted a man. I wanted purty clothes. I wanted control over folks. I wanted nigh everything I seed or thought of. I wanted things so bad that I didn't care how I got 'em. As I look back now, I can see I didn't have nary a bit of gumption. You remember years ago, Zolly, when I used to go out at nights and tell you I was going to see my sick sister? Well, I was going to witch meetings. No doubt about it, I was one of the first in these hills to join up with them. Yep, I traded with the devil and promised I'd let him use my pretty body during my lifetime and get my soul when I die. He promised to keep me pretty, make me rich, give me power to cast spells over people and things. Oh, the devil bit my big finger till it bled, and since I can't write, he took my hand in his and helped me write my name in that there Bible. That was my contract with him. Yep, I made that out as soon as I saw the Bible," said Zolly. "Now, how'd you make them witch balls?"
"Well, you have to make witch balls on Friday the 13th, so we had a special meeting that night. The devil had told us the meeting afore what every witch was supposed to bring. If she didn't bring it, she had to kiss the devil's bottom and then bare her own bottom while the devil gave her 13 licks with a bundle of rose thorns. Every time a witch had screamed, she'd get another lick." Izzy frowned, thinking about how the thorn thrashing hurt and what she was risking by talking about it. She almost stopped, but the sight of Zolly's lowering face made her go on. "When we met at the crossroads down nigh the graveyard, the devil first drawed a big ring about 9 feet across. The witches rounded up some firewood and built a big fire in the middle of it. When it started burning good, the devil poured a mess of things on it to make it blue, green, red, and yeller flames. Then he put a pot on to boil and threw into it a bottle of weasel's blood and a handful of dried baby's flesh. Then each witch throwed in the stuff she'd brung to the pot, and the devil throwed in any stuff they'd failed to bring. And after this, we all joined hands and danced round the fire while the devil chanted, 'A pair of dead spider's legs, guts and bladder of a black cat, dead baby's toenails, buzzard's eggs, blood of a weasel and tail of a rat, the eye of a big fat sow, the whisker of a wild cat, a tit of a milk cow, and the brain of a bat, the foot of a toad frog, the hair from a murdered man's wig, the dried turd of a fast dog, the hair of a Poland China pig. To this mystic myrrh, to make a witch ball, I the devil doth stir, to place curses on one and all." When we let this brew boil for about 7 minutes whilst it cooled, the devil handed us candles made out of human grease. We lit the candles from the fire and marched round the ring till they was most burnt up, then threw them into the fire. Then the devil took up blobs of the stuff from the pot and wrapped each one with hair each witch had cut from her own head, and this made the witch balls. Witches who'd brung what they was supposed to got 13 witch balls, and those who just brung part got 7 balls. And that was all I got. Them that didn't bring nothing only got 3 balls. The devil told us these balls would have to last us until another Friday the 13th when we could make some more. If a witch lost one or let somebody steal one, the devil would whoop her with rose thorns. That's why people don't find witch balls. The witch slips back to get them so she can use them again. And so Zolly found out how witch balls were made, but not much else. He exacted a promise from Izzy that she would quit witching. But the promise was worthless, since the devil never lets a witch back out on her contract.
and the devil gave her a thorough beating with rose thorns. Soon she was back at her old tricks, but she was far more careful to conceal it from Zale. The End. The Witch of Booger Hole. Recorded in Clay County, West Virginia, at Big Otter Creek, sometimes called Booger Hole. From Patrick W. Gaynor's collection, Witches, Ghosts, and Signs. It was back about the beginning of the century that Grandma lived at a place called Booger Hole on Big Otter Creek. Grandma had a mare that she called Old Fanny, and one day a young fellow named Andrew came to Grandma and said, "I'd like to borrow your mare to do a little plowing." Grandma said, "All right, Andrew, you can use her if you don't work her too hard and be sure to feed her well." Well, after 3 days, Andrew fetched Old Fanny back, and when Grandma looked at her, she said, "Andrew, you've ruined my mare. You worked her too hard, and she looks mighty peaked. Now, Andrew, I'm going to ride you every night till you're just as peaked as Old Fanny." Well, some folks around here said that Grandma was a witch, and that she could do strange things. I don't think Grandma ever witched anyone, but then she might have done it. Anyhow, Andrew said that she came in of a night and put a bridle on him and rode him over all over Pilot Knob. He'd wake up in the morning all tired out with burrs in his hair, his mouth sore from the bridle bit. This went on till Andrew was almost crazy. Grandma lived in a little log house that had been used one time as a schoolhouse. It didn't have any lights or glass in the window, but Grandma kept a quilt hanging over the window at night. One night someone raised the quilt and shot poor old Grandma as she was sitting in the chair. I went in there right after she was shot, and I saw Grandma with her arms hanging down over the sides of the chair, the blood running down. They accused Andrew of the murder and they arrested him, but they didn't have any evidence against him, only that they said Grandma had put a spell on him. So they let Andrew go. Now, there's another part to the story that some folks don't know about. There was a man who had come to this community who was named Henry Hargis. He was a stonemason and he built chimneys for a lot of the folks around here. And people said he kept money around him all the time, for a lot of folks didn't trust the banks to keep their money. Henry Hargis disappeared and nobody seemed to know what had become of him, though a lot of folks thought there had been some foul play involved. Grandma thought she knowed one of the men who had killed Henry Hargis, so they say she put a spell on this man's horse so that he couldn't catch it in the field. The horse had always been tame, but now every time the man would come near it, it would kick and bite. He had an idea that Grandma put a spell on his horse, so he went to her and begged her to take the spell off his horse. She said, "All right, I'll take the spell off your horse, if you'll tell me where Henry Hargis is buried." Well, finally he told her. It wasn't long after that we were all sitting in a room, and there was Grandma and some other women, and I was there with my little baby. I'd been married for the year before to Grandma's grandson, and I was holding my little baby in my arms. Grandma said, "I could light my pipe." She always smoked a clay pipe. "And before it goes out, I could take you to where Henry Hargis is buried." I tried to get Grandma to keep still, but the women had already heard her. It wasn't long after that when they shot poor old Grandma. And I always did believe that these women told their husbands that Grandma knew too much. And that's why they killed her. The End. That was Mulligan Stew by the Gatlinburg, Tennessee-based band Tuatha J, who have graciously provided the music you've heard in this episode. If you'd like to know more about them, you can find them at tuathaj.com or follow the link in our show notes. We'd like to thank Tuatha Day for allowing us to use their music for this episode. You've also heard Celtic Woman Mavis McGee after the opening, and Skyboat Blues. That's Sky, as in the Isle of Sky, S-K-S-K-Y-E. All songs are from their album Kith and Kin. They've currently got a Kickstarter project going on to help fund their next album. We'll link to that in our show notes as well, and we highly encourage you to support them if you can.
Definitely.
So, anything else to say about Mountain Magic, I reckon?
Nope.
All right.
Not right now, anyway.
All right. Do we have any feuds going on we need to deal with? Any Hatfields or McCoys? Those dad-blasted McCoys? Concerned at Hatfields?
No.
If you're a Hatfield or McCoy and you're listening to this, I apologize. I don't consider you doggoned or concerned. Or any other...
You consider them a varmint?
Well, they're all varmints. Or any other 19th century prospector talk about them. Anyway. We hope this has been an interesting episode for you. Again, this is sort of a superficial addressing of the topic, at least in our portion of it has been.
Yeah. We hope to get more in-depth to it, but yeah. That would require a lot of research, which we're willing to do, just... I know.
Yeah. Just think how many episodes we've had that have been at least somewhat centered around hoodoo.
Right.
So, this is a big topic. We'll be getting to more of it.
Right.
Anyway. But if you want to reach us, you can reach us by contacting us at our website, which is newworldwitchery.com.
Mm-hmm. Or there's the email, which is compassandkey@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Or you can find us on Twitter. We're at NWWitchery. I think that's
the
main ways to get a hold of us. You can, don't forget, we've got a spring lore contest going on now through March 21st. Send us your springtime lore, and you could win one of three fabulous prizes, which I don't have in front of me right now. But they're fabulous, and they are prizes. So, do that. If you want a card reading, I am doing those. You can check out our sidebar on our webpage for that.
And we also have a donate button as well there on that sidebar.
If you want to support the show, those are excellent ways to do it and get a little something in return.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, all right. We really appreciate you spending your time with us. And until next time, thanks for listening.
Be well.